It is my pleasure to introduce to you Debbie and Claire Bruning. Their topic is Raising a Child with Down Syndrome, God's Way, Not Ours.
And give a little bit of background about this particular speaker. She is a dear, dear personal friend of mine who is just the most amazing person. I cannot tell you the energy and the dedication and the compassion, but fierceness that this person has. If you've been following our symposium ride, as we've been going through this over the past probably 6 to 8 weeks, you would have seen that we originally had Tony and Denise Zarella in this spot talking about the joy of Down syndrome children. Well, then suddenly we just had Tony Zarella, and then we had Tony dropped, and then we had, and this was just sort of things that have happened. It's nothing, you know, these things happen. They had different conflicts that came up. Then we had Christine George. Something happened with her, and she couldn't come. All along, we were going to have Debbie Bruning as the moderator because of Debbie's incredible knowledge about this issue. Well, when the last speaker dropped, I said, Debbie, what am I going to do? And she said, I'll do it. I'll be fine. I'll do it. Debbie Bruning is probably, I honestly can say, she's probably one of the hardest workers for life in the Cleveland Diocese. She's tireless. She does. She's just in charge of all of the literature when we do literature drops. Debbie's the one that gets everything out for us. She has the most incredible organizing skills. But on top of that, she has such a deep, deep knowledge of the joy of Down syndrome. Without further ado, Debbie Bruning.
Okay, now that I'm sufficiently flattered, time to begin. Thank you all for being here. It's such a comfort to me to look around and see friends and see people I've spoken with even before we got to this time slot. Most of all, I'm blessed to have my daughter Claire speaking with me. Claire, stand up. Come on. She's an eighth grader. Come on. Eighth grader, Beechwood High School, and I have to say not too many daughters want to join their mother at this age speaking. I'm glad. So sit down. You'll have your turn. And my back to be a mom. And my parents, Bud and Carol Kuhl, are here too, and that's a blessing as well. So. One of the things I want to draw your attention to is something I don't see very often, and that is right up there on the slide, Deborah and Claire Bruning. I am usually known in Beechwood as Peter's mom. I have a name. So I'm thrilled that both Claire and I could be recognized for being our own selves too. But the reason we're here is because of Peter. Peter is our fourth of five children. Catherine, you'll hear more about her later. She is first year med school at the Boonshoff School of Medicine at Wright State University. She has a part to play in today's presentation. Brian and James come next, and then came Peter, and then came Claire. Everyone has a part to play. Unfortunately, Peter is not able to be here because he's too busy. His life keeps going, and this is what keeps us all going. He is probably at a dodgeball tournament at Beechwood, and my husband's with him. So I think we need to work this, right? Yes? Oh, there he is. Okay, that's Peter today, 17. He's a sophomore at Beechwood High School and proudly sporting the varsity coat, which he earned. And this is all part of the story of the joy of raising a child with Down syndrome. Anybody who knows a child with Down syndrome knows they have to work harder. They work harder at their speech. They work harder at reading. They work harder at math. For Peter to have this coat and for me to show you this picture means that Peter earned it in cross country. To get there, he had brothers who ran with him. He had orthotics placed in his feet to support him. He had a coach that believed in him. Nothing happens by accident with this child's life. There is a background that is beautiful. And we all hear that, you know, cheesy story about the tapestry of life. You don't see the back, okay? That's what we live with. It's a beautiful thing. We're hoping maybe next year he'll get another letter in swimming. So Peter's someone to be admired, and that's why we're here. Okay. Here we go. That's the two of us before a Cavs game last week. All right. This is what I want you to take home with you today. I want you to know that I'm only here because of Pete, because of the people in my life who have supported me, the faith my mom and dad have given me to believe that God has a plan, and we don't know what that plan is. God makes no mistakes. He makes no mistakes. And God never leaves us alone. And if there's anything you carry away with you from this story, I hope this is it. Okay, birthday time. Peter, you know, we had three children, Catherine, Brian, and James. They were almost seven, almost five, and two. So we were already busy, but my husband and I talked about whether we were going to have more children, and I think this is a nice story. Dave said, I feel we're missing some pitter-patter upstairs on the second floor. And I said the same day, we're missing someone around the kitchen table. So Peter was not a surprise in the fact that we knew we wanted another child. The Down syndrome, of course, was a big surprise. At that time, the culture, to show how it shifted, when moms got together, we talked about, are you going to find out if it's a boy or a girl? We didn't talk about prenatal testing. We talked about, do you want to be surprised or do you want to plan? And it was a very positive thing. It was pink or blue. It wasn't keep or not keep. So when Peter was born, we had the chance, the opportunity to be tested prenatally with an amniocentesis, but my husband and I were very firm in our faith that this is a child of God, we will keep it. There is no question, there is no choice. We're having a baby. But I will say, as much as Peter brings the joy that he does to us in our life, for me, when he was born, it wasn't an easy ride. And the primary reason was not necessarily the diagnosis of Down syndrome, but the medical part. He was a sick baby. He was born, and they, of course, did all the testing. They tested him for heart conditions because 50% of babies born with Down syndrome will have a heart condition. And it's actually interesting if prenatally they do know that, with ultrasound techniques, they can predict that 90% of the time it will be four heart conditions. Atrial ventricular septal defect, atrial septal defect, ventricular septal defect, and tetralogy of flow. Now, could you give me some applause for knowing that? I'm actually doing that just to do that to my daughter in med school. So before, another story about the whole diagnosis. Peter was born, and there were quite a few people around the incubator, more than normal. It was a bit of a red flag, but my husband and I were just happy. We had a baby boy, so we had a girl, a boy, and another boy. And we talked about how many pounds of potatoes we will need in the future. So we were happy with that. But that evening, Peter was born around dinner time. That evening, when Dave left to go back to the family, tell him the good news, when I tried to catch some restful moments, some things were happening. Peter didn't breastfeed very easily. His muscle tone, he was relaxed. He was so tired. His eyes were nice, but they were a little slanted. And he just wasn't that bonding I was used to. So in the morning, I woke up, and he wasn't there. Usually, I ask, can I have the baby, you know, can I have our son with me? And he wasn't there, and the nurse said, don't worry, Mrs. Bruning, he'll be back. He's away for some tests. And I thought, okay, some tests. Well, I always brought a Bible with me. And I thought, this is a joyful moment. I'm going to read, see what God has in store for me. Now, I'm not kidding. God moment here. Psalm 139, how many of you know that one? If you're pro-life, raise your hand, right? Before you were born, there you go. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully made. No lie, I read that, and a little voice was whispering to me, and I never thought of this before. Debbie, what if all those things being knitted together isn't perfect? What if it isn't perfect the way you see it? It's perfect in my eyes. And that's what I thought that morning. I put the Bible down, and the pediatrician walked in. Now, was that comfort? God always gives us what we need when we need it. I think back to that day, and I think, we are not alone. He is always with us, just when we need us. So the doctor came in. Okay. Claire's having a fit. Okay. Technologically challenged mothers are not fun to watch, are they? Okay. So our pediatrician's name is Dr. Conrad Foley. And I have to tell you, he did everything right in terms of his physician. I've heard other stories from other parents, and they are not the same. And I'm very glad I could acknowledge him for this. He sat down next to me, so we were eye to eye. My husband, Dave, was not with me. I wish he was, but he wasn't. He was on his way. And Dr. Foley said, congratulations, you have a beautiful baby boy. Now, isn't that the right way to start a conversation? Okay. Nice. So he said what he did, and then he said, there are some physical markers that indicate your son, because we hadn't named him Peter yet, may have Down syndrome. Well, Mama Bear took over, and I said, and how many times have you diagnosed a patient with that? And how many times have you been right? And I had my dander up. I wasn't going to hear that. I had a wonderful son, and you're not going to tell me anything's wrong with him. But I knew. I knew. And so he went through a couple of the markers. He talked about the simian crease. If you look at your hand, you've got two lines. Peter has one. He talked about the ears that slanted down back a little bit and were tiny. And I knew that. They talked about his muscle tone. I knew that. They talked about, low muscle tone and his eyes. His eyes had fissures, but what it is they're almond-shaped. They go up and a flat profile. So I thought, he's right. When he was making all those references, I was saying, check, check, check. You're right. But it's still hard because he still wasn't in the room. And I didn't know where he was. And so Dr. Foley said he's in for some tests. We're checking out his heart. And he stayed with me for a while, which was very comforting. He went on to tell me, and I did research later, but I do want you to look at, when you look at chromosomes, and some of you are more technical and understand this better than I, what's interesting with Down syndrome or trisomy 21 is that every one of those 23 chromosomes are normal. It's just number 21 has 3 bits instead of 2. So everything's normal, which I say is a reflection of Peter today. Everything about him is really normal. He has the same feelings, the same goals. He wants to work. He wants an apartment. He has feelings. He's really stubborn because he's 17. He'd rather be with dad than mom. There's a lot of things that are the same. But that's an indicator of what Down syndrome has genetically. A geneticist was counseling us. Isn't he adorable? Like, how do you not love that baby? But, okay, so here I am following Peter to NICU because he still has this unknown issue. And I am sobbing my heart out. I have to tell you, people say, oh, Deb, you're so strong. You're so patient. Well, my parents know better. Claire knows better. But at that time, I was an emotional wreck because I had 3 healthy babies, no bumps in the road medically, a little inguinal hernia with James, big deal. He'd die if I said that in person. But this was really hard for me, not to be able to hold your baby, not to have that bonding. You didn't know where he was in the hospital. So I made 2 calls. I made 1 call to my friend Ann Schmidt, a college friend I hadn't seen for 12 years until we took an art class, and her daughter Isabella had been born with Down syndrome. We hadn't seen each other again. God makes no mistakes. Our lives, our paths crossed right before Peter was born, so I called Ann, and Ann said, welcome to the family. And I was like, you know, it just takes a load off. Then I called my friend Julie and said, Julie, things aren't going well. I don't know where my son is. And she said, Debbie, get in a wheelchair and follow him. Why don't you be with him while he's tested? And I thought, okay, Deb, college, MBA, and I can't put that together. But thank God for friends. That's why we need each other, and we need to support each other because they all said the right things. So Peter ended up having Hirschsprung's, which is an intestinal disorder where the nerve cells in the lower colon do not work, and he required surgery. The outcome could have meant a colostomy, but it didn't. He became famous. He was actually on TV. We were interviewed because he had the first laparoscopic surgery at University Hospitals for Hirschsprung's. So he did great. He didn't have heart issues. But he had 4 other operations. Okay. This is what some children are faced with and some parents are faced with Down syndrome. Heart conditions, gastrointestinal abnormalities, leukemia, infections, meaning mostly ear, a lot of tubes in the ear, hypothyroidism, atlantoaxial instability. And the last one, atlantoaxial instability, is the cervical, the first and second cervical vertebrae. It means that your son or daughter cannot be involved with sports. They have to be careful. And thank the good Lord, Peter, with all his energy, did not have that. So we were blessed. So we had a big bump in the road there with his Hirschsprung's. Oh, thanks. I'll catch on. Okay, so adjusting, once Pete got home, we were fine. We kind of got used to putting weight on him. He was very thin after the surgery. And again, that was hard because we were kind of homebound for a couple months till he really gained weight. I didn't want him outside when he was a bag of bones, basically. It's a very scary feeling. So life goes on. We adjusted. And I was feeling better because of another friend who came in, who I contacted. And that's my friend Linda, who's a psychologist. And at different times, my husband, being the good guy he is, he would say, take a break, go to the mall, walk around, get out. And oh, it felt so good. But I was obsessed because I would be drawn to strollers. I'd be out by myself and I'm like, what's wrong with you? You could be looking at these nice shoes or something. I was looking at strollers, and every time I'd see a child that I knew was normal, I'd start crying. And I thought, how am I going to handle raising four children and Peter, who needs a strong mother, when I'm falling apart all the time? So I called my friend Linda, who lives at the time in Colorado. She put it all together. She said, you're grieving for the child you don't have. And I thought, you're right. That doesn't mean I don't love him. It doesn't mean I don't accept him. I'll take him sick or not sick, Down syndrome, not Down syndrome. But I needed to somehow identifying a problem that we have is the best way to move on to healing. And she did that for me, and I'm still grateful. Okay. Many people, anybody here have a child with Down syndrome? They probably should have been a sister. Have you heard of the trip to Holland? Many people have. Okay, all right. When we first, became a part of the Upside of Down support group, they contacted us right away in Greater Cleveland and held our hand and gave us information and said welcome and made us feel good. One of the things they do is they give you an article, and then before you know it, in a week, you have 25 of them, of Welcome to Holland. And the point of the story is this. You are preparing to go to Italy, and you get your guidebook, you learn the language, you find out, okay, Michelangelo, how many paintings are in Florence of Michelangelo or statues? You do all your preparation. And so you get on the airplane, and you're thrilled to pieces. You are going to Italy. And then you get off the plane, and they say, welcome to Holland. And you're like, no, 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 no. It was Italy. And they go, no, no, no. It's Holland. And you're saying to yourself, wait a minute. Things have changed. Plans have changed here. But it's not an awful place. It's not horrible. We can adjust to this. And that's exactly what our life became. At first, I thought, this is a cheesy article. Trip to Holland. Right. Could you get me a diaper? But after a while, you do accept the fact you're on a different path. It's not a bad path. It's different. See, I'm watching. Okay. This is Peter, first birthday with Grandpa. And I have to say, what? Oh, okay. I'm not supposed to talk. I'm supposed to let you listen to music in a minute. But I have to tell you a couple. I won't tell you anymore. Where's the music? I won't say anymore. Okay, I'll tell you one story. The grandpa, my father-in-law, gave me $2 one day. He just popped in, four little kids, and he said, see you later, you got 2 hours off. He was an angel in my life. So, and give me the wave, if it starts working. In the meantime, I'll talk. My father-in-law was one person who stepped in to give me the boost to keep going. My parents were there the week I came home with Peter. That was such a help. The week Peter was in the hospital, my mother-in-law literally showed up the door with a suitcase and said, I'm here till he's back, until you're back. This went on. And I will say, you know, another thing too is I didn't know how, I still don't know how I got through those months when Peter was so sick. And I think from talking to all of you, some of you have been struggling with taking care of someone who's elderly, who's been sick, who's been in the hospital. And when we have medical issues, when we have things that are bumps in the road, truly that's when really the body of Christ works best. It's the most beautiful thing. And what I found out later, when Peter had been through the hospital and was still, getting better, we had the entire kids' Sunday school class at Parkside Church praying for our family for 6 months. And, you know, I didn't know that for a year. They told me later. It was like, oh, by the way. And I'm like, that's what got us through. Okay, movie time. Well, that would be Claire. Eighth grade technology is awesome. And she's a good kid. Okay. Let's see. So much of Peter's childhood was pretty normal. But what I'd like to do is actually turn everything over to Claire right now. My daughter Catherine wrote a short piece about Peter, which I cannot read. It's too much for me. So Claire's going to read that, and then Claire has her own statement. But I would like to, if you can hang on for a little bit after Claire finishes, I do want to address the prenatal real quick. Okay, thank you.
Hello, the testing.
Does it work?
Hello? Okay. Peter was born when I was 6 years old and was my third brother. And for a while, that was what it really was to me, yet another brother. I didn't really recognize or understand his disability at the time and honestly never really thought too much about it. I remember doing extrasensory motor stimulation for him with my mom as a baby. But that was all fun and games, enjoying a smiling, giggling baby. It probably wasn't until I reached the sixth grade that Peter's Down syndrome to me became more apparent. This wasn't so much from my interaction with him, so much as my classmates and peers asking questions about him. It was also during this time that I started to feel very protective of him, and classmates, casually saying words such as retarded, started grabbing my notice. I unfortunately never said anything about it, but I always wondered if Peter would ever really know what that meant if someone said it around him, and if he would be bothered by it. Yet still, Peter was just my little brother, no different than my two other brothers in my opinion or perspective of him. He was different, and that was okay. He was Peter. My perspective didn't change too much in high school. I was in a public school, and for the first time, I had people who had special needs who were to be in my graduating class. The first day of school, we had a gym class and played an unregulated volleyball game. About 15 minutes into the game, I realized that some of the guys on the team were trying to hit those with special needs who were walking around the track with the volleyball. It being my first day at a new school where I knew no one, I said nothing. It's a moment I regret to this day, and the guilt will never leave me. Part of me today still feels like I let Peter down by not saying anything. Moving on, my freshman year in college was the first time I truly realized how much of an impact Peter had on my life. I got involved in Best Buddies, which is a big brother, big sister model, only with adults from the surrounding community of colleges nationwide, ages 17 and over. I think I initially joined because I missed Peter. I also remembered my mom trying to arrange multiple playdates for Peter, many of which failed. And I figured I could be that friend for someone, just as my mom was trying to find a friend for Peter. At first, the experience was a little scary, to be quite honest. Despite a lot of exposure with people with Down syndrome growing up, I didn't have much experience to the wide spectrum of autism and other various mental and non-concomitant developmental disorders. It wasn't hard to quickly feel at home with the group, and my buddy was very filling no matter how much time I spent away from my studies. I truly felt that I was doing something good for both them and myself, and I'm so thankful I had the privilege to have them as part of my life. I am now a first-year student at Reichstadt-Bunschoft School of Medicine, and during my first semester of ethnics class, I realized the reason I was in medical school was because of Peter. Sure, I had written essays about my love for special needs, all very true, but I never really linked it with the practice of medicine. But now in hindsight, I would never be where I am today without the influence of Peter. So how exactly has Peter been inspirational? This I could write a book about, I'll try to keep it to a few examples. Peter knows no boundaries. Despite his disability, which, like 99% of others with a mental disability, is in denial about, he keeps trying new things and never gives up once he puts his mind to something. He rode a two-wheeled bike by the age of 10, a feat doctors said he would never be able to achieve. He can read, he can write, and learned a method to do math. He can shoot a basketball in midcourt and make it 40% of the time. There I also admit that he could legitimately beat me in a game of one-on-one. My basketball skills don't need to be discussed here. Peter, trying to be like his three older siblings, studied for years to take his SAT and ACT. He copied a book into a notebook for hours in his room, which he calls his office, so he could go to college. This sounds quite sad, and it is. I know it was and has been hard for my parents to watch him aspire to do things that you and I take for granted, all the while knowing that it simply isn't possible. I think I can speak on behalf of my three older siblings when I say that Peter's motivation to be the absolute best he can without any regard to his disability inspired us to strive to be the best we could with our own abilities and disabilities. We're all human, right? I'm certain that deep down we all know that we would be letting him down if we didn't try as hard to succeed as he does. Most overwhelmingly, Peter has taught me how to love. He's my dude, and I'm his sweetheart. Claire is his honey, and Brian and James are in a constant battle for the title of my pal. No one is as unabashedly happy as Peter to see someone come home, in my experience from college. He loves you unconditionally and extremely honestly. How beautiful would it be if we were all that joyous to see our loved ones every day? I feel so incredibly blessed to have him in my life and to be able to experience this type of love, because not everyone has the opportunity. Working with special needs and Best Buddies and later Special Olympics showed me that this is not unique to Peter. So many special needs people need help to humble you and bring you back to the basics of love and honesty. I know these seem to have a very hippie mentality, and I wasn't even alive in the 70s, but I think they are all very human things. And in the end, we are all human. We want to love and be loved just for who we are and nothing more. That is something Peter can do. It is something he has challenged me to do, and now has challenged all of you to do. If you know a person with special needs, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you don't know someone with special needs, befriend one, and I assure you that you'll find that I am right. Challenge number two. I wish to speak briefly on the quality of life, a topic that often surrounds discussions of special needs. Many people argue that a disabled life is a poor quality of life and sometimes a life not even living. I must ask you, is it the disability that gives the affected individual the supposed poor quality of life, or is it how society treats the disability that gives this individual a poor quality of life? Every time I pose this question, I am reminded of the incident at the gym my first day of high school. It is our jobs as human beings to increase the quality of life of all people who we get the privilege to share our lives with. People with special needs and other developmental disabilities were given a challenge in life from birth. It is absolutely necessary that we as a society do what we can to give them the best opportunity for a good quality of life as they work to overcome the natural challenges of their own disability. Peter won't go to college and hasn't been able to drive a car even though he is 17. He has and will struggle with this challenge and many others in his life. We all do, only his are different. I hope this talk inspires us to see the person and not the disability. I also hope this talk inspires you to help others see the beauty in the individual and the remarkable influence in a person with disability can have on your life if we just let them. I've said this before, but I feel so lucky and so privileged to have Peter in my life, and I wouldn't want it any other way. I've tried to give you a glimpse of what living with special needs is like, but as William Faulkner once wrote, words are no good. They will never fit what you are trying to get at. Words are not deeds. Yes, I know I'm using words to create my point, but so did Faulkner. That being said, I invite you all, should you get the opportunity, to share in the privilege of life of a special needs individual. Let them influence you and let them help you grow. Let their imperfections help you learn to embrace your own imperfections as they do. Let them teach you what life is really about. Thank you.
Wow. Unbelievable. We're going to end off because we're so tight on time, but I have a question that I want Debbie to answer because this is one of the things that has been very dear and close to her heart about sharing their story with her and actually came up as one of the questions, and we're going to take one of them. We do have several others and I will put them, as I've mentioned all the way through, they'll be on the radio program. We'll ask the questions of Debbie and she'll answer them. But the question is basically, you didn't really mention, you sort of went over the whole idea of testing. Mm-hmm. Can you deal with that?
It's not a fun topic. I look at this room, and if I was teaching a classroom, I would have 28 people stand up and look behind them and say, those were your friends that were chosen not to live. It's 90 to 95% of the children with Downs that are not allowed a chance. And it's a very difficult thing to live with, because when God has a plan, he has a social dimension, and that is that we are not to be by ourselves. We are to have friends. We are a social people. And for me to seek out a friend for Peter means not going around the block. It means driving to a different suburb. It means not looking in the grade. It means looking beyond. But what I do and what I encourage all of you to do is, families who have children with Down syndrome, encourage them to keep their child in public. Put them out there. They can be servers at Mass. They can be involved, and when people see what they can do and what they bring into their lives, that affirms the mother who's saying, I'm not so sure. And when the family receives help from other people who come in and they say, I'll help for an hour and play basketball with Peter. I'll help and walk your baby around the block. That is being pro-life. And that is sending a message to that family who is doubting whether that child should be born, because they know they'll get the support. So we have to challenge ourselves too in what we do. If we're aware of somebody in need, we don't say, oh, that's great, you kept the baby. We have to do the next step. We're the body of Christ, and we should be doing that. And I think we're not going to eliminate the prenatal. It's not going to go away. My dad and I were talking about it. It's not going to go away, but by being a good witness to how the body of Christ should be working, we're going to help prevent the fear that motivates that decision.
Wow, Debbie Bruning, thank you so much.
You have been listening to Debbie and Claire Bruning discussing raising a child with Down syndrome. God's way, not ours.